KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing, unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Finance Committee will meet on Thursday, February 4th at 4:30. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Welcome to An Islamic Point of View, a production of the Muslim Community Center of Portland and this station. This week marks the beginning of Black History Month. In our observation of this precious season, we have a very special episode for you today, and all throughout the month of February. Today, sit back and let us listen to the voices of some of our Black Muslim American brothers and sisters. Sister Aisha Prime, Imam Talib Abdurrashid, Malcolm X, Muhammad Ali, and many, many others. We do hope you enjoy this special episode and the beginning of our observance of Black History Month from a Muslim Islamic perspective.
The next section that we cover as it relates to African Americans and Islam is a darker, more painful history. It's called the Quran in Chains. What we find is that there are a multitude of those who had strong Islamic knowledge, even who were Hufadh of Quran, who arrive at the shores of America, but not as a voyager, not as someone who's seeking an adventure, but actually in chains. Someone who's forced on the shores of America through the horrific act of the transatlantic slave trade. When they arrive, many of them, there are documented accounts that says well over 30, even some into 60%, said that many of them were Muslim. And in those Muslims, you will find the likes of Umar ibn Sa'id, Abdurrahman ibn Soro, who was also known as the prince among slaves. You will find Yaro Mahmud and multiple other accounts. Accounts that you can also find in the book by Sylviane Jouffe and the Servants of Allah. You will find their stories, for example, with Omar ibn Sa'id, where he was not only someone who was a practicing Muslim, but someone who was also well-versed in several West African languages, well-versed in English, and well-versed in Arabic. As a matter of fact, when those who owned him asked him to write the Lord's Prayer, it's known that he actually wrote Surat al-Nasr. And in other parts of his writings, you will also find where he wrote poetry praising the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam till the end of his life. It was known that Abdurrahman ibn Soro, who was known as the prince among slaves, was also someone who not only was quickly recognized for his level of intelligence, his command of multiple languages, but also because he had been a military leader in his own country, that he also was known for being a leader on the plantation. And so when the slave masters of that plantation began to recognize his intelligence, of course, he became very valuable to them. And so, of course, they would use him for their own benefit, for their own gain. But eventually, when he tried to write a letter back home to his family, and he asked someone to deliver it for him, when they realized that this letter was in Arabic, they immediately thought that he was from amongst the Moors. Eventually, they petitioned the Moroccan government on his behalf, and he was eventually returned back to West Africa. Yero Mahmoud lived in Georgetown, right now what is we live here in Washington, D.C. He was actually known to have a bank account and to actually be a stakeholder in one of the banks here in D.C. There are many, many accounts of those who came in chains to the shores of America as Muslims and who began to spread Islam. But not only did they spread Islam, they also spread the spirit of freedom. And with the spirit of freedom comes the fire of rebellion against oppression. And that's exactly what happened in the next story. We have a story by the man of the name Imam Makandal. And Imam Makandal was actually, not only was he a great religious student, but he was also a great religious teacher. And many of his students began to disappear, having been kidnapped and sold into America. So he eventually, Imam Makandal, had himself sold into slavery in order to find out what had happened to his brothers and sisters. Where had those walking Qurans disappeared to? And so he ended up in Haiti. But while he was in Haiti, he began, of course, to do what? To teach Islam. He began to, just as he had done on the shores of West Africa, he began to teach the Quran. He began to teach Hadith. But also he began to teach them that they were not the slaves of any man, but in fact that they were the servants of Allah Ta'ala. And as a result, they had the birthright to be free. This Imam Makandal would be the one who would be the teacher of Imam Bukman, who would become the leaders of the Maroon movement in Haiti, and also the teacher of Toussaint Louverture, who would eventually lead to the Haitian Revolution. This spread across not only the Caribbean, but it began to spread into South America, it began to spread into the Americas, that more and more Muslims were becoming known for that spirit of freedom and therefore their resistance against oppression. In 1760, they decided to pass a bill that they would make it illegal for slaves imported into America to be of the Muslim faith. Why? They were not easy to encapture, and they would not remain in slavery in peace.
As much as we're talking about, bringing it up to the larger Muslim community, we also need an element of self-education. Mm-hmm. Because what happens is the other thing that happens of Islamic scholarship and Islamic know-how and who is more Muslim, it happens even within our own masjids and masjids that are run by Black Muslims. And what happens is somehow, just because someone is from an Arab background, somehow they have a priority of knowing the religion more or mm-hmm. being more pious or becoming the imam or becoming the Quran teacher, while you could have a Black sister who's equally qualified, but just because of, where she's from or, whatever it might be, not get that opportunity. So it's like some of the work that Sheikh Abdul Hakim Kouk has been doing is that the whole education of, after Mecca, right? Mm-hmm. It was Abyssinia. Mm-hmm. It was East Africa that Islam was formed. Like, mm-hmm. forget everything else. Mm-hmm. Like, so there was Mecca before even Medina, mm-hmm. right? So like that whole inherentness of Black and Muslim mm-hmm. being together. And even when Medina, when the Muslims came back, there was the Ansar and the Muhajirin and then the Abyssinians who came back mm-hmm. with the first Muhajirin. That was the Muslim society, mm-hmm. right? So I only learned this about this maybe over the past maybe 6-7 years, mm-hmm. right? So this is again not being taught anywhere. So that whole mm-hmm. self-education is very, very vital as we continue having these conversations.
Even in Mecca, I started from there, mm-hmm. where, you know, the people around, I mean, the Sahabas, a lot of them were black. Yeah. And when we look at that in the relationship and the involvement, and we're like, man, we've been there from the beginning. And this is important because a lot of black people don't know that. It's not just Bilal, right. you know, and this is all you hear. And this is very important to actually get this sort of ownership.
You know, black people, we're always talking about, I mean, you can't have a conversation with a bunch of black people without maybe within 2 minutes racism mm-hmm. sort of coming up yeah. or some kind of trauma associated with race coming up. Mm-hmm. Because I think, you know, racism is such a traumatic experience for us. You know, like many of us can always remember the first time, you know, we had some kind of encounter or were disparaged because of the fact that, you know, we have a bit more melanin and we look a little bit different. We can remember when we were called the N-word. We can remember being second-guessed. We can remember not being selective for a certain opportunity because of our skin color. All of these things. So it becomes a traumatic experience that we then internalize, and then it becomes something that we live with throughout our lives. But, you know, ultimately, I think it's from an Islamic context, it's even more traumatic because of what we know about the religion. Because at the core of the religion is, you know, and you know this is what attracts people like Malcolm X to the religion, is the total destruction of the concept of racism. Mm-hmm. The idea of superiority on the basis of skin color, ethnicity, is something that is rooted first and foremost in the very narrative of a shaitan in the Quran. Someone who takes pride in his ethnic origin, mm-hmm. someone who takes pride in having been created differently by Allah. And when Allah questions why he hasn't obeyed his order, he references the way in which he was made. So you know, we think about the Prophet, peace be upon him, his last sermon and his reference to his community, telling 100,000 Sahaba that, you know, if an Abyssinian slave with hair like raisin, or reminding them that, you know, a black has no superiority over a white and a white has no superiority over a black. It's at the root and at the core of this religion to overcome, to face squarely the issue of racial and ethnic pride and prejudice. Mm. So I think that's why many of us, we can't even understand or fathom how our Muslim brothers and sisters don't seem to make this connection between their Islamic identity and how they're treating and looking at black people.
Mm, to add to that as well, in the very end of that sermon, The last line, like, there's no black is better than a white, no white is better than a black, except by piety and good character.
Yeah.
So there is a hierarchy.
Yeah.
Like it's cutting down the racial hierarchy and introducing one that is supposed to encourage us to strive towards the betterment of our character mm-hmm. and something that is pleasing to Allah. And I think in the practice of racism as it exists in various communities, what is so disheartening is that you lose that last part.
Yeah.
You uphold the hierarchy that we are supposed to be breaking down,
yeah.
and you break down yeah. the one that we are supposed to be emulating.
The Prophet, peace be upon him, mentions in the sermon that, you know, he says to his companions that they should take this message to those who were not here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he says that may those who were not here understand or hear this better than those who were here. And, you know, many scholars have said that, you know, this is not just for their time, but this is for our time as well. So in some ways, black people discussing racism and trauma is a continuation of that sermon. Mm-hmm. Us making our brothers and sisters from other backgrounds aware of the effects of racism on us is a continuation and a practice of what the Prophet, peace be upon him, has asked us to do. So I think I take your point that, you know, sometimes, you know, we, you know, there's always this tension and this desire to, you know, remove ourselves from having expectations from the broader community and sort of secluding ourselves out and doing our own thing, which is something that in many ways might be needed in certain circumstances mm-hmm. as part of the healing process, as part of the ability to speak towards our own issues and challenges. But at the same time, we can't, I don't think we can ever forget that we also have a responsibility to communicate the message, at least part of the Islamic message, as a reminder to our Muslim brothers and sisters, and hopefully even to the broader non-Muslim community. I mean, I come from a non-Muslim background, and you know, as a convert, you know, I didn't have anybody come to me and explain to me Islam's position or how relevant Islam, how relevant the issue of anti-racism, or how Islam takes a very strident line towards anti-blackness or anti-racism or racism rather. If someone had taught me that or sort of exposed me to that, that might have left an impression upon me when I was much younger. And it's not until many of us are older that we come across, you know, figures like Malcolm X, who are people who are continuing the struggle against racism, and then we identify his religion and his relationship to his religion and his actions, and then we draw a connection to that, and we say we want to be like that. Mm-hmm. You know, and how many brothers and sisters came to Islam because of Malcolm X embodying that message.
Black Muslims have sometimes, whether you have or not, and I think probably you have sometimes, it seemed to me, been preaching hate to meet hate.
I don't advocate any kind of hate.
But there's a lot of talk that sounds very much like it.
No, I think that the guilt complex of the American white man is so profound until when you begin to analyze the real condition of the black man in America, instead of the American white man eliminating the causes that create that condition, he tries to cover it up by accusing his accusers of teaching hate, but actually they're just exposing him for being responsible for what exists.
Well, that's something of an argument, but I've heard speeches made by some of the people of your group. I think I've heard you make speeches. It seemed to me that you were advocating, I would have to describe, I think, as violence to meet the serious injuries that have been done your people, with which I totally agree.
I don't call that violence. I don't in any way encourage black people to go out and initiate acts of aggression indiscriminately against whites. But I do believe that the black man in the United States, and any human being, anywhere, is well within his right to do whatever is necessary, by any means necessary, to protect his life and property, especially in a country where the federal government itself has proven that it is either unable or unwilling to protect the lives and property of those human beings.
Just before Pierre takes it, you've got a pretty good fighter and the world's heavyweight champion lined up with you to help out. Yes, Pierre.
Well, Mr. X, if I guess I call you that. Is that a proper appellation?
Yes.
Mr. X? I'm wondering if you still believe, as I think you certainly did at the time you were allied to the black Muslim movement, in a segregated black nation.
No.
In North America.
I don't believe in any form of segregation or any form of racism. I'm against any form of segregation and against racism.
Am I right in saying that the black Muslim movement, which you have left, did believe in that?
Well, Elijah Muhammad taught his followers that the only solution was a separate state for black people. And as long as I thought he genuinely believed that himself, I believed in him and believed in his solution. But when I began to doubt that he himself believed that that was feasible, and I saw no kind of action designed to bring it into existence or bring it about, then I turned in a different direction.
Are you still a Muslim yourself?
Oh, yes. I'm a Muslim. I believe in the religion of Islam, which believes in brotherhood, complete brotherhood of all people. But at the same time that I believe in this brotherhood, I don't believe in forcing my desire for brotherhood upon those who aren't willing to accept it.
Of course, I think the Christians would say that they also believed in brotherhood. What did you say to that?
I'd say they believe in it, but don't practice it.
Well, that'd be a pretty good answer.
Sir, when the muezzin goes up in the minaret twice a day, he cries to the world, "There is but one God, and he is Allah." Do you deny that there is a Christian God?
The muezzin does this five times a day.
Five times, and I only heard him twice.
Well, you were fortunate to hear him twice. But he does this five times a day, and the same God that he says that he expresses the existence of is the God that the Christians profess to believe in themselves, and the God that the Jews believe in, one God, the creator of the universe. The Muslims believe in the God that created the universe, and I think the Christians do, and the Jews do. Now, as long as all of them are talking about the creator, the Jews may call him Jehovah, and Christians may have another name for him. Those who are Arabic-speaking refer to him as Allah. Well, we believe in the same God.
Now, as the Muslim religion advances in the United States, are you modernizing it or sticking with the old faiths? For example, the complete segregation of the sexes.
I think that everything today on this earth is being modernized. Religious principles and practices, as well as political and other things.
Now, when you went to Mecca, this is a very sacred and forbidden city. I tried to get to Mecca myself and certainly didn't make it, not being a Muslim. But how would they accept you as one? You're an American. There are few American Muslims.
This is true. And by being an American and not having not being able to speak the Arabic language, I did strike a snag, a very serious snag. But I was fortunate to have been pretty well known by the officials in Arabia, and they knew too that I had accepted Orthodox Islam. It had been highly publicized in the paper, and I became a guest of the state. I was a guest of Prince Faisal, the present King Faisal, and they made it possible for me to go before the committee, Hajj committee or Hajj court, who examines you and asks you questions about your belief, and if you pass it, then you are okay to go to Mecca. But
you would have to have a translator then.
I had one.
If I can go back just for a minute, and this is obviously meant in a spirit of friendliness. The question of the Islamic religion and your future in that. The impression one gets is perhaps it is loosening up a bit after the death of Elijah Muhammad. Do you think it's changing now, and that your role in it can change in view
of
what
the Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught was good for the time. During the 30s, when black people have been castrated, lynched, deprived of freedom, justice, equality, raped, he had to teach that the white man is a devil. His actions towards us is that of a devil. Now that we're no longer being lynched, raped, castrated, we're given equal justice. We can go anywhere to live, even the North, fight the South, so we can have certain rights. People are not acting this way today. So Honorable Wallace D. Muhammad is on time. He's teaching us it's not the color of the physical body that makes a man a devil. God don't look at our colors. Minds, hearts have no color. God look at our minds and our actions and our deeds. So we have white Muslims, brown Muslims, red Muslims, yellow Muslims, all colors. So it's the color. So the big thing in the change now, we have white people who have accepted our faith, and we now recognize all men as brothers, and we look at them according to their works. Some blacks can do evil, and whites. So it's not the color. Now we look at the actions.
Come and you go. African Americans are one third of all of the Muslims in America. And there's no one who's more familiar with the many faces of bigotry and racism in America than African American Muslims.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.
Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah.
I embrace Islam. At the age of 20, I've been a Muslim, a Sunni Muslim, ever since. And these two dimensions of my humanity, religion on one hand, and the struggle for justice on the other hand, are at the core of my being today at 66 years old. The Mosque of Islamic Brotherhood was first incorporated in the borough of Brooklyn, but then because of our historical tie to the Muslim Mosque Incorporated and to Malcolm X, we moved and established ourselves in Harlem 1970-71.
You're living at a time of extremism, a time of revolution, a time when there's got to be a change. People in power have misused it, and now there has to be a change, and a better world has to be built.
Because I was raised in a spirit of resistance, and because this congregation was born out of a spirit of resistance, we have always reflected that in our worship, in the sermons that I give here. Because we are traumatized people, man. I know that. We are traumatized people with all kind of hurts and pains and trauma. And when people are traumatized, you have to go easy with them. But you also have to. The African American Muslim community has the same challenges and the same obstacles as the non-Muslim African American community, struggling around issues of housing, against gentrification, police brutality, police abuse of power affects Muslims in the African American community just like it affects non-Muslims.
No peace, no justice, no peace.
5 years ago today, one of the sons of our community, 28-year-old Muhammad Ba, was executed by members of the NYPD, just as they executed Amadou Diallo, just as they wanted to execute Yusuf Salam, one of the Central Park Five.
1989, shortly before 9 o'clock in the evening, a 28-year-old investment banker.
I've been a member of the Masjid for probably over 30 years. When this case first happened to me, I was 15 years old. Imam Talib, he made sure that his part was always there. And by his part, I mean the social justice component that your religious leader can play is important.
A serial rapist confessed to the crime 13 years after the attack. His DNA matched, and the five teens' convictions, they were vacated.
I don't remember Imam Talib ever saying, hey, did you do this? You know, I remember when Imam Talib would be called, say, for instance, into the courthouse. They were trying to make us the worst of the worst. So we were falling in the category of sexual predators. And so Imam Talib was called in as a character witness to make sure that the courts knew that I was a productive citizen in society. I was a value in society.
The predominant emotion in the African-American Muslim community is not fear, it's resistance.
Today we march for justice for
Muhammad Ba!
Muhammad Ba!
Because there's nothing that anyone can say to us that we have not, you know, been there, done that. We do face a kind of double whammy discrimination. That is our reality. We are black twice in America, as if being black once wasn't enough of a challenge.
I'm a police commissioner of the city of New York,
yes, sir,
to enforce the law.
Yes.
We call upon.
Bigotry is always based on fear and ignorance. The forces who exploit fear and ignorance in America have always used those things as tools of division. So we must combat them by coming together, by combating division with unity, by combating hatred with love, by combating otherness with sameness. We came to America in different ships, but now we're all in the same boat.
You have been listening to Islamic Point of View here on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. Some of the voices you heard today include Sister Aisha Prime, Imam Talib Abdul Rashid, Malcolm X, and Muhammad Ali. We do hope you have enjoyed this launch to our observance of Black History Month. If you've benefited from today's episode, please show your support with a donation at mccpdx.org or at kpoo.fm. Islamic Point of View is a production of the Muslim Community Center of Portland. Please follow the Muslim Community Center of Portland at facebook.com/Muslim Community Center of Portland for weekly updates, lectures, and videos. Islamic